Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Okay, and through that, also you remember, brought to you by our friends at the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, or WPCouncil.org. And I get to meet this great eclectic group of people through them. And one of them is here in our studio today. You know, we often say in the digital or in the computer world, GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. And for a long time, it was very, very difficult to get statistical information from fishermen, including me and probably you. Now we've come to see the value of that, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today. Our subject is going to be catch reporting, but in the big picture, what happens to this information that they capture? And as a special guest joining us today in studio is Chris Boggs. Christopher Boggs is with the National Marine Fisheries Management Service, or NOAA, actually, NOAA Fisheries, and the Pacific Islands Fisheries Science Center here. And he's one of the chiefs that does this research and monitoring. How important is this stuff? I can't tell you. But I can tell you that they get all excited when people tell them the truth and give them the information on a timely basis when they need it. How you doing, Chris? Nice to see you.
That's good to be here. I'm doing fine.
You know, I do know that a lot of people don't understand what number crunching is. And you were at the last meeting of Fisher's Forum, meeting these young gals that had done their thesis based on data. And spotty at best, but I mean, nonetheless, I would think that you would agree, maybe, first question, that technically we are able to produce wonderful information and come up with models and things that work. But what about the baseline stuff, where we get that information?
Well, that it all depends on that. Mm-hmm. And those researchers did some great models, like you said, yeah, with the information available to them. There's a real richness to that information. Lots of variables, lots of things recorded, especially in the state of Hawaii, recorded for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But you already alluded to the garbage in, garbage out. Yeah. That is the big issue. We have that information because the state, in its wisdom, started long, long time mm-hmm. ago to try and collect it. And they've got better at collecting it over the years. And we have to use it. So,
yeah, what's the choice, right? Yeah. I mean, it needs to be used. Yeah.
So the argument is always about whether it's worth using and what does it really mean.
How accurate is it?
How accurate is it?
I got to tell you something. When I was commercially fishing back in the day, we had these really cumbersome, big orange or pink, big things with a spreadsheet on it, but they were manual, and there was carbon paper, and you would write it down, and then every now and again, if you didn't turn in your reports, you'd get a card from the fishing game that said, "Hey, where's your reports?" Right. And so then you would say, "No fishing," mail them in. Yeah, thinking you've done your thing. Yeah,
yeah, that didn't help a whole lot.
No.
Although at least it meant they were trying to keep after you. And I gather that was there were years when that was done well and years when it wasn't. That's part of our problem.
But today, though, I want to tell you, with science the way it is and the way that everybody has made data collection and reporting so easy, I guess a good thing that you're starting to get much more valuable stuff.
We've worked for the state for decades mm-hmm. to try and get better forms and more comprehensive forms and to try and check in more different ways the information coming in.
You said one interesting thing that off the air that we here in Hawaii seem to be doing a pretty good job when compared to other areas. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, we have a one thing I should mention is that when we started doing this in Hawaii, mm-hmm. Hawaii started doing it by itself, of course, and when the federal government got involved in trying to help the state, the territories in the Western Pacific do it, we had no idea the information we'd be as important as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
People were interested in just knowing something about their fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
So,
like accuracy with stocks?
How many fishermen do we have? What do they catch?
Sure.
What kinds of fisheries do we have? This is a very far cry from the stock assessment we have to do now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the amount of management being done has gone way up. So that's raised the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And information that was collected when there was no such thing as fishing limits is now being used to set fishing limits.
But you know what I think is interesting? I mean, you know, based on the science and the data that you guys gather, and you certainly know enough about this because you've been around a while long enough to know that that we don't really understand the importance of fessing up sometimes when it comes time, because isn't this information the very information that's used not only in stock assessment, but maybe size, take limits, everything else? Are you surprised that Hawaii is the least regulated fisherman's state that there is with regarding to license and compliance?
Well, I've lived with that fact for a long time, so I guess it can't be surprised by it. Mm-hmm. It does seem
it's ironic
because fishing is so important.
We revolve around this thing called fishing, and we don't even have licenses.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, so what? One of the things that makes Hawaii a little more advanced that I was referring to earlier before I prefaced it with the comment of why we are collecting it is that Hawaii does require at least the fishermen to report.
Mm-hmm.
In the other territory, and I shouldn't say other territories, I mean in the territories,
yeah.
Guam, the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas Islands, and American Samoa, there aren't requirements to report.
So you know, I find that interesting because isn't their economies even more reliant on fish?
Yeah. And they have
it is their economy in many cases.
But there's a value in all of these places, Hawaii included, to not impose on the fishermen, to give the fishermen a little less interference. That's a strong local value.
You know, I'm glad to hear you say that because I know one thing that the council has struggled with is the perception in the fishery of who these guys are. And we've been trying to inform everybody through this program and others that it kind of is bottom up. Yes. It is taking information from the very bottom. And I'm sure that you've looked into this a little bit. Back in the day when there were Kunahiki rights and there would be a strip of land from the top of the mountain down to the sea, and then you get into these fishing rights, it worked. I mean, you know, it was a system that pretty much worked because there were consequences if you broke the law.
Yeah, that was the ethic there, was let's leave it in the hands of the fishermen and interfere less. There's that sort of ethic, and then there's also the lack of money. I mean, requiring fishery statistics to be collected, hiring the people to call people up and remind them, creating a system. These are all things that take funding, and of course, anyone you ever interview will always complain about the lack of funding. But
if I ask you what the wish list is, we don't have enough time. You have a big one. Yeah, but, I get it, though.
So those two forces have kept requirements to report down.
Okay, what about this? I mean, I'm thinking that whenever you get, say, a species or something that is threatened, whether it's from an invasive species or just overtaking, is that the wake-up call? Are we finding that there are people likely to give a little bit more information because the reality is they can't go down to the old fishing hole like they used to and get what they want?
Well, we don't really have any fish yet except for, I think, scalloped hammerhead shark most recently.
Yeah.
But so far, the endangered species are all non-fish.
Right. However,
if that time comes, it's going to really raise the ante. Yeah,
and that's why I'm thinking that some of this stuff that we're talking about, because there is a fine line between the endangered species you're talking of and the quantities of fish that we eat, because right in the middle is that thing that's endangered that's also eaten.
Yeah,
you know, so there's an interesting group of
You mentioned it. We used to eat the turtles.
Yeah,
so
now they're saying, well, anecdotally, it seems like turtles have returned. But now I understand there's science to verify. Yeah, we by not taking these things since 1970, whatever it was, it's shown that by leaving them alone, they'll come back.
Yeah, George Balaz at the Science Center. He's watched them work to make them come back. Yeah. For over 20 years, the populations have been increasing.
He was the greatest at explaining the tumors, that we didn't cause them, that these tumors happened to the frogs. Great guy. Okay, so, but in the big picture, and you've been at the meetings, let's talk about you said that even though the reporting was even spottier in some of the territories, that at least there are models there. Is it working out that they get it maybe as much as we do now, or do you think they're starting to realize that, hey?
No, they're starting to realize we need to do something much better in the territories than what we have done. And there are recommendations, frequent recommendations, to turn reporting into a requirement there. As it is now, what we do is we collect data from voluntarily from the people who deal the fish in some of the places, and we go out and survey people. We interview fishermen. I shouldn't say we. It's the network. It's the Western Pacific Fisheries Information Network. So this is mostly staff at the territorial fisheries agencies that do this surveying. So it's going out and asking instead of making people report.
You know, I'm not sure that, say, in Hawaii, because we have this core group of people that are commercial, and then we have this large group that are recreational. Then we have that middle group that are recreational, but if they catch plenty, they'll go sell it. And the good news is that I would imagine the interaction between the you know, the United Fishing Agency and other wholesalers and auctions, that is a big help because they for tax reasons, got to tell the truth.
And that's another gold star for the state of Hawaii because they have a system that requires those dealers to report their catch too. Yeah. So we get the same information, well, hopefully the same information, or at least information we can try and match up from both the fishermen reporting what they catch and the dealers reporting what they sell. That's what you need to try and at least get a handle on what the catch is.
How important, and I want to impart this information to our listeners, is that guy that's in the middle. The guy that mostly is recreationally feeds his friends and family, but doesn't understand what an impact he has on the fishery.
Well, it would be really great if all of those people did file commercial catch reports. If the way the law reads in the state, if you sell any of your fish, you're supposed to report all of it. There is a lot of unreported catch, but the pure recreational fishermen are not even required to have a license or report anything.
But what a concept when they join a club to talk about tag and release. Or when they say voluntarily, I'm going to tell you what I'm doing. Because I think what's happening here is that there used to be this big fear that the immediate minute fisheries got this information from Mike Buck, that they mailed a copy to the IRS.
Yeah, there's
there was that big fear out there, right, Chris?
And that's understandable. And there's never been there's nothing like that that goes on.
Yeah,
I mean
people that are that. Want to do what they want to do on their taxes is not the concern of the scientists that are trying to measure and manage a stock.
Yeah. The state of Hawaii is incredibly careful about maintaining the confidentiality of what fishermen report.
You know, I got to tell you, I do a program once a month with Crime Stoppers. And when you call Crime Stoppers, you give it a number. They don't want to know your name. They don't have a caller ID number. And once people do that, they'll understand this information that they give up about their fish, same thing.
Yeah. No, I think by and large, we have a huge community of people who try and do a good job of reporting. There's missing information from a lot of people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then the complexity of what needs to be reported really makes it hard to use the information in a way that's meaningful. And people have a lot of criticisms about
that. Okay, I know that we're not talking about species here, but I do know that a lot of the study that has been done on the Deep 7 lately has been very valuable. Because their quota was either maintained or increased because the data showed that it was a sustainable fishery.
Well, in 2011, we did an assessment with some new information that caused the quota to increase.
Mm-hmm.
But most recently, the stock assessments have indicated a need for it to decrease.
It needs to decrease a little. But at least it shows that there is, in cooperation, it is going to guarantee species. Because see, here's what happens. When the quota goes down, the price goes up. And it'll go up to a point where people will either not buy that fish anymore or will realize it is that important. If I want to eat that species, I got to pay more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that can be that can actually be harmful in a sense that if a fishery's not controlled and the price goes up, people can fish too hard. But I'm sorry, you're talking about a control system where
there's
limits in place.
Yeah, and only because it seems to me. Like, I do know that, for instance, when somebody wants to increase, right now there's this big thing to increase the commercial size in ahi, and our resident yellowfin, because it's sustainable information that you need to let these babies produce. And if you take
that has not been shown
to
be true.
Is
that
right?
It's a concern.
Ah, okay.
It seems such a naturally sensible, common sense idea that it's hard to combat the idea with information.
Do you think it's the size that is the actual determination might be whether it's, you know, this size, that size, or the next size? If they keep putting it up, fishermen are going to get a little perturbed by, wait a minute.
Well, this is another
case. How do I let those go?
Yeah, it's a case where people are challenging whether we have the right information to do our science and our model.
Yeah.
But the science and modeling that's been done so far for the local area, Hawaii, says actually if you let those little fish go, the chances of seeing them again are so little.
Yeah.
That you should keep them.
It wasn't sort of interesting that particular fish, the yellowfin or the ahi, we're grappling with, do we really have a resident population or are these the fish that migrate? And it's I guess we're pretty much agreed that we do have local ahi and we just got to check them out to see how sustainable it is.
Well, the model that I'm referring to assumed that they were as local as the local tagging data said they were.
Yeah.
And a lot of them do remain around Hawaii.
But the
model also said that they die off so quickly that even if they're local.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That you should keep them.
Hard to imagine little baby ahi making big, long sweeps. In other words, they come here, they're born here, they're pretty much going to die here.
Yeah, the longest moving fish are fish that were tagged at a larger size by recreational fishermen in the Atlantic.
Yep.
And where we haven't had a program like that, getting the larger fish tagged here. In the Atlantic, the large fish went all the way to Africa, many of them.
Amazing. Huh? Yeah. Matter of fact, and we have as regular guests on the program, and next week coming up some more of these guys from Wicked Tuna, you know, because it's such an over-the-top sort of show.
Yeah.
But they have a 73-inch minimum for bluefin in that fishery. And they've been pretty much, when they bring a fish up, their eyeballs are that good, they know it's its keeper or not. And more are tagging them, and it is very interesting where these bluefin go. It's truly amazing, isn't it?
Yep. Well, for us, the data question is how many little ones do we really catch?
Yeah.
And this is an illustrative point about reporting. The small ahi don't get reported. They don't get some of them do, but a lot of them obviously don't. One of the things we do in Hawaii is we survey recreational fishing. So again, it's not reporting, it's surveying. And those surveys have a lot of variation from year to year, but they suggest that there may be 10 times as much ahi being caught by recreational fishermen.
I'm afraid I'm going to buy into that.
Yeah.
Because I think that what's happening is that it's well and good to say share and tag and let them get bigger, but the reality is somebody's hungry or somebody doesn't care.
So the fishermen here, this is typical, the fishermen will hear about our model from the John Seibert University scientist. They'll say, but you have the wrong data for it, so we don't believe it.
Yeah.
And he's tried to assume much more small ahi than there is in the data. But now you start talking about you're making assumptions and people disbelieve you even more.
Well, we have this opportunity with this show and others to reach out and talk to the right people. I do know that, for instance, as people hear this the following week, there's going to be this first ever Kiwalo Harbor Big Fish tournament. And it is going to be looking for this big marlin. But more and more tournaments on the Big Island are tagging and releasing. And there's going to be that category for this. And it seems like, all right, if the commercial guys are willing to do that on some species, can't the rest of us? I miss Mike Sakamoto when he used to kiss the fish and turn them back in again. But I think that maybe this audience, Chris Boggs, would be right to embrace some of the things that you all need to do your job.
Yeah, well, tagging and releasing marlin is a really, really good idea. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, marlin are much more exploited. Their population size has been much more greatly reduced than ahi. And they're in much greater need of that kind of...
Isn't it sort of ironic that the ones that we keep are the ones that we should tag? And the big ones, if you're tagging a big marlin, you might, even though you think you're doing the right thing, maybe that big marlin should be taken out of the water because it is now no longer breeding or whatever. But I do know that there's that these big females are pretty important to the food chain. So taking them out...
We think leaving them in would be good for the reproductive value. Yeah,
but, you know, the ones that get taken most of the time are the 200, 300-pound fish because it's easy to gaff them and throw them in the box.
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. But what about, once again, if you're able to look right in the eyeballs of somebody listening to the radio and say, hey, I'm talking to you, man, or woman. I want this from you. I want you to learn. I want you to help us.
It helps if people try the best they can to report their catch in all of the details that the state catch forms have. We will endeavor to use that information. We take criticism for how we're using it, take it seriously, and try to improve how we use it. And the part that you can do to help us is to do a more thorough and careful job of reporting.
Okay, let's go from this standpoint. Let's say that we've convinced everybody today. Okay, from now on, I'm going to do what Chris says. I'm going to report. I'm going to be accurate. Let's talk about what happens to this data that when it comes in. When you get this data, I do know that there's all kinds of hungry birds in the nest that want to grab bits and pieces of this. Where does most of the data go to? What's its main function?
Well, the state, it goes to, this, not to me, it goes to the state of Hawaii, and we collaborate with them through West PacFin. It gets into a computer.
By the way, that's West PacFin. Let's make sure people know what that is.
Western Pacific Fisheries Information Network.
Right.
It's a collaboration between the federal government and the states and territories to help them collect and to maintain the records from fishing in states and territories.
Yeah. And this, by the way, once it gets, because of the age that we're in, instant transfer of information, once these things become available, they become very valuable in a lot of areas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are constantly receiving requests for this information. Mm-hmm. We are very careful about who can have it because some of it's confidential. All the names, for instance, are confidential.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
And any information that's that is for just a single separate or two separate fishermen, any information on separate fishermen at all by itself is also considered to contain trade secrets just because it's one person's operation.
Sure.
So even with
the
name stripped off, anonymous, it's considered confidential. We only allow general public and university researchers and people without special credentials to have that information if it's an average for at least three, a summer an average for at least three people.
Yeah, I think what's also important is a lot of people think, well, they want my GPS coordinates for my favorite moy hole or whatever. In actual fact, you do need to know broad areas, but the requirements are not exact specific with grids or anything or exact numbers.
Well, there's big
grids.
The state has its statistical areas, and they're the same areas that they've been using from the very beginning.
Right. Well, some of us in tournaments will get those Sierras, and you know that's a big help. But it does show that there has been a scientific way to delineate stuff, even though a fish doesn't know what grid it's in, right?
The grids can be very useful. Better, more localized information might be even more useful. Mm. The state, decades ago, started keeping track of fish caught at FADS. That's a little more precise. Mm.
Sure.
A lot of this more precise information hasn't really even been used yet. Part of the problem is when we're doing assessments, we need to go back as far time as we can. And the old days didn't have those details.
Yeah, no kidding.
So
we're
asking for a lot more details, and we've been criticized for not using them in our models.
Yeah.
But keep on reporting those because we're going to try and put that information in the future.
Talk about the model. We often talk about it when we talk about the weather. This is hurricane season. We're really taking a look at these, quote, models. There are the models in the fishery, and I know there are a lot of different ones in different areas. But they can show the good, the bad, and the ugly of what we're doing.
Well, we're taking catch, our estimate of how much is caught, as a measure of how many fish are killed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're taking the ratio between how hard people fished, called the effort, and how much they catch, that ratio of catch to effort. We're trying to use that as an index of abundance. Now, as I've already mentioned, there's unreported catches.
Yep.
So there's an issue there. And there's differences between how easy and hard it is to fish and how much you catch per unit effort. There's differences there that aren't due to how abundant the fish are.
Yeah, that's
interesting. So the modeling is all to try and take that into account to not make a worse mistake than you could.
Yeah, compound the problem.
So,
once again, I want to go back to this wicked tuna thing, only because even though we're only following a half a dozen boats really in this thing, there's hundreds. But in an actual fact, every single, whether it's Gloucester or wherever, they are mandated to list that catch when it comes in. So there is going to be one certain day, that's it. The season's over based on the TAC or the total allowable catch. Aren't we sort of angling at that? And doesn't it make sense in some of our fishery right now? Seems to be working for the longline guys.
Yeah, well, the longline people had a limit first.
Mm-hmm.
Although, in fact, they no longer stop fishing.
Yeah.
We attribute their catch to a territory at some point, and they keep right on fishing. Although there are protected species limits that can actually shut the fishery down. What happened was Congress said, thou shalt put limits like that on all your fisheries. That's what the annual catch limit, the ACL is, that's given us so much concern recently.
And these decisions are made thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
So what we give them better be valuable, better be accurate.
We also make local choices about what to put on the list that needs to have an annual catch limit.
Give me.
Well, all the coral reef fish are on it now.
Mm-hmm,
and that's the data that we have that's the poorest. That's
lots of
fishing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mean small in stature, but people, small operations using a huge variety of techniques.
Just driving around the island over the weekend.
Yeah.
Seeing all these fishing poles out in the water and guys with scoop nets and buckets and scuba gear. And I mean, everybody that can get in the water is in the water.
Yeah. So having it be hard to do it's not a good reason not to manage something, but it is a very hard one to do. And we chose, the Fishery Management Council chose to include all those species into federal management at a time where it actually made more sense because we had big federal waters that could be fished for refish, like the Northwest. But almost all of those areas that can be fished in federal waters are now gone.
Mm-hmm.
And this ACL requirement is a federal requirement.
Yeah, and there was a time when it was terribly cost prohibitive to even think about going from Hawaii to some of those places. But as time has changed, and you and I talked off the air before about when a coolie was 50 or 60 cents a pound.
Yeah.
And now it's way more. Now, if you could go down to some remote island and catch 20 tons, it'd be worth the trip.
So the council was being precautionary. Yeah. It was including something that needed federal management at the time, yeah. and we've kept a holdover on that. I mean, you're referring to thousands of miles away. That decision to manage the coral reef fish under a federal management system is a local decision.
Yeah, yeah, that's very interesting. You know, there's one thing. I remember a couple of years ago when they were talking about, first they were talking about marlin, then ahi, and then limits. And then somebody talked about mai mai and ono, and when is it going to stop? And a lot of people got, you know, they got really concerned that that Big Brother was doing too much, and a pelagic surface running game fish was a pretty hard thing to collect data on. Are we getting somewhere with that?
I think we have, especially from our longline fishery, mm-hmm. which is federally licensed,
right.
federally required report on federal logbooks, and matched with yeah. an observer program to yeah. go out and collect the same data and make sure it matches up fairly well.
Interesting, huh? Because
we have a lot yeah. of really good data now yeah. from the 90s onwards from logbooks on mahi-mahi and ono.
And what I thought was fascinating to me about that is, in many respects, it's bycatch for them because they're really after something else. But now they're actually, it has value.
It can be used to make a good measure of abundance.
Yeah.
Knowing total catch, mm-hmm. we have the same problem I alluded to earlier. There's
sure.
all that recreational catch,
mm-hmm.
which might be 10 times higher than we know it. And if you're going to use catch to estimate yeah. how many fish are dying, you got to have some estimate of what
yeah,
the
whole thing amen. Is. And when somebody comes in and says, oh, yeah, we got 34 pieces today, that's a lot of mai-mai.
So there's going to be pressure mm-hmm. to make recreational fishermen have a licensing
yeah.
report. That comes up periodically. I
yeah.
think it's coming up again. Sometime in the near future.
As a matter of fact, I think next year in 2016.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of us that were maybe very vehemently opposed to that in times past would say, you know, you got to stand up. You got to be counted. You got to make, because there's no such thing as share the everything. We just don't feel that way. But if we were mandated, it'd be a little bit different, don't you think?
Well, it's yeah. a different
yeah.
world. If we
yeah.
have these catch limits, there's a strong reason to have information yeah. we get along without before.
By the way, once again, making sure that you understand, when Chris Boggs and the folks gather the information that they gather, it's not just for to have a job to keep things statistically going. What it is, it's important for this entire area to be represented from the bottom up. That's what we talk about in the council. So in a perfect world, people would pay attention, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of attention being paid in my world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good for you. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and spending time with us today, Chris, and hope that people do the right thing and they give up the numbers that are going to make y'all's jobs a little bit easier.
Well, I want to thank people for all the work they've done on this already, and thank you for having me.
Yep, there you go. So that's going to wrap it up. I want to thank you very much for being with us. And if you're going to be in that tournament next week, good luck to you. I'm going to be there at the Skipper's meeting, I think, and also at the weighing-in at the awards celebration. But if not, I plan on coming down to Kiwalo and checking out. This is the Kiwalo Harbor Big Fish Chase. And remember, if you want to hear something on the program, it's easy. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@AOL.com, themikebuckshow@AOL.com. And for everybody at POP Fishery Marine, Life Raft Safety, and Nico's in the Western Pacific Fishery Management Council, thanks for listening. See you next time.